Ideas matter. Ideas matter. This is Dialogue.
Hello and welcome to Dialogue. At least 9 people have died and some 2,000 have been evacuated after the Novokarhovka Dam ruptured in Ukraine early this week. There have been no clear answers as to the cause of the breach as Ukraine and Russia continue to trade blame for the incident. So what have been the damages so far? What help is being offered to those in the flooded areas? And what impact could this have on the ongoing conflict? To help us answer these questions and more, I'm joined by Peter Zamayev, Director of the Eurasia Democracy Initiative, Leonid Savin, Editor-in-Chief of Geopolitica, and Anton Fadyashin, Associate Professor of the Department of History of American University. That's our topic. I'm Xu Qingduo. Welcome to Dialogue. So Peter, I will start with you. We are seeing the pictures of villages being submerged, and some people have to leave their home behind and probably migrate to somewhere else. So tell us, what's the latest on the ground in the affected area?
Well, it's a true tragedy, obviously, and all of Ukraine is coming together to help thousands and thousands of its compatriots to deal with the aftermath. You know, there are already hearsay accounts of hundreds of corpses floating down the river, people who have died. Russia has exacerbated Ukraine's rescue efforts by shelling those evacuation areas of Kherson, which is what the Ukrainian authorities are reporting. So a very dire situation, and we obviously still have to wait to see the full scale of the disaster, considering that all the industrial components of various industrial facilities that were there that have been flooded have actually entered the open waters. Obviously, people's, the sewage system is also now part of this mass that has entered into the waters of the Dnieper River and downstream into the Black Sea. Already there are reports of tremendous amount of fish that have died as a result of this. And just to be clear, this area, no matter how soon it will actually dry up, will probably be not functional as agriculture for years to come, which is what we'll be probably discussing later, which is maybe part of Russia's strategy to make Ukraine economically unviable, pursuing the so-called scorched earth tactics.
Ecological disaster, the potential, obviously it is probably happening. And Leonard Savin, how is Moscow responding to the flood and to the dam breach here?
Now, first of all, I would like to say that Russia sent note to United Nations many months ago that this problem is very possible, because in December, Ukrainian side attacked them by HIMARS missiles. So it was a very old problem, and now Russia responded and doing anything to evacuate civilians from this zone. So actually the goal of Ukraine is very clear: to kick off first line of the defense of Russian armed forces in near the Dnieper River. So they use this type of non-conventional weapon against Russia in this region. And of course, there will be some kind of ecological and humanitarian consequences of this attack against the dam. So there is many questions and still need to do full analysis what happened there.
Anton, so whichever side did this, obviously it's a disaster, and it seems like both sides are suffering, not only on the Ukrainian side, and if you look at the Russian-controlled area, so people are also suffering from the flooding. Obviously, it's being affected, including the soil.
Yes, of course, which is why people are talking about ecological impact of this. There's also a long-term economic impact, which Peter referred to a little bit earlier. the Kakhovsky Reservoir, which Ukrainians and Soviet citizens refer to historically as the Kakhovskoye Morye, the Kakhovsky Sea, because it's such an enormous body of water, which you can see easily when you look at maps of the area or at satellite images. It also contributed greatly to the agricultural development of southern Ukraine. The dam was built in the 1950s, completed in 1955, and then the reservoir was filled by 1958. And the man behind this remarkable engineering feat, Petro Niporozhny, was one of the most remarkable engineers in the Soviet Union, who then went on to become the Minister of Energy of the Soviet Union from 1962 to 87. And so he approached his work, as did the Soviet government, with a holistic approach. The dam was not only producing electricity, which is now not going to be the case until everything is fixed and rebuilt, but it was also an essential part of agricultural development in the south. And the Kakhovsky Reservoir was also the source of water for the Crimean Peninsula, the northern part of the Crimean Peninsula, also, of course, for agricultural purposes. And finally, the Kakhovsky Reservoir, which is where the water is flowing out of, was also an important part of internal, back then, of course, Soviet, now Ukrainian trade. So all of this will be affected, and all of this will have very serious repercussions for both banks of the Dnieper River, the Ukrainian-controlled one, and the part of the Russian-controlled territory, of the Kherson territory. So economically, the repercussions are going to be very important and potentially long-lasting.
Peter, of course, the Ukrainian governments and also European countries have blamed the Russian side for the bombing of the dam here. Are we seeing any evidence or arguments presented by the Ukrainian government, like it's you know, the rupture, how the rupture happened?
Well, so far, I mean, I would actually defer to Western analysts, not just to the Ukrainian government's conclusions, who have been coming to a sort of accord as to who would be the culprit behind this, the destruction of the dam. And by all accounts, it's you know, the conclusion is that to disable it from the skies by hitting it numerous times, either by HIMARS rockets or any other sort of artillery shells, is simply unfeasible and near impossible. Like the previous speaker said, it was built in the 1950s at the height of the Cold War, and so was built to withstand any potential nuclear attack. So an internal explosion, which actually was registered by the Norwegian seismic agency, is the only plausible scenario. And for Ukrainians to have entered this territory, which has been controlled, as you know, by Russia, with the sort of explosive you know, devices and the sort of and in necessary quantities, would have been once again impossible, and to have done this undetected would have been impossible. So by all accounts, this was done by the Russians. Yes, there's an argument to be made that this explosion benefits neither side. It's not clear the military, you know, use of this explosion. But I think Vladimir Putin, considering once again that he's been waging a scorched earth war against Ukraine, seeing that a military solution of this war and a military victory is not in sight, has been resorting increasingly to such desperate tactics that are designed to send a signal, not just to Ukraine, but to Ukrainian Western backers, that he will not back down, that he is willing to go all the way. This is just the first such step in that direction, and I think he is hinting that worse is to come. Now, once again, downstream from this dam is the Zaporizhia nuclear power station, and there is also an argument to be made that this the destruction of Kakhovka could impact the viability of the nuclear station and could be a signal by Vladimir Putin that he is willing to contemplate some kind of a nuclear blackmail scenario unless the West steps down and stops supporting Ukraine. So I consider this as part of Russia's blackmail, but in my mind, there's no doubt that it was, in fact, the Russians who stand behind this crime against humanity.
Mm-hmm. Well, Leonid Savin, Moscow blamed the Ukrainian side for damaging the dam. So are we seeing any evidence from the Russian side?
No, of course, it's obvious that it was done by Ukrainians, because I told before Ukraine already attacked this dam, and Ukraine also attacked Zaporozhye nuclear plant. It's very dangerous. It was shelled from Ukrainian side. There is facts and confirmed by international observers. And of course, another fact that Ukraine not close gates on another dam in Dnipro-Ges. So they just would like to organize a very huge flow of water because the most damage is on Russian side by the moment. Of course, they also need kind of informational boost, like in Bucha and like in many cases before, because so-called counteroffensive has failed. There are a lot of mistakes from Ukrainian side. They cannot to find vulnerabilities and weak point of Russian defense line. So they need this type of actions. So it's very obvious. And I think there will be investigation, and Russia will bring on the table new facts that it was done by Ukrainian side.
Well, Anton, you know, I wonder, you know, some people are talking about that. Is there any possibility, you know, the dam probably starts like collapse, a natural collapse because of the structural issue? Because it has been under shelling for some time. You know, we don't know, like it's in the war zone. Obviously, it is receiving the bombing from probably both sides in the past months. So is there any possibility, or, you know, if there's any investigation, are we expecting clear answer out of the investigation?
I think we'll have a clear answer after the investigation is completed, but that will take a while. Let me just qualify something that Peter said earlier. I do not see a consensus emerging among specialists in the West that the Russians were responsible for this. As a matter of fact, CNN just ran an article this morning, it's morning here in Washington, in which it seriously considers, and it's spoken to American hydraulics and hydroelectric experts who are divided, and some are seriously considering the fact that this may have been an accident, but an explosion, which we clearly see from the footage released of what happened on the night of the 6th, but that this could have been an explosion that was caused by a compilation of negative effects of the damage that the dam has sustained. And if that is the case, and again, we have to wait for the investigation, but if that is the case, then it's the Ukrainian side that would be responsible, because it is made public, and it made no secret about the fact that it had been hammering away at the dam, because the dam had a road running along it, and the Russians were using it to supply their troops on the right bank of Kherson province before they retreated. So again, all of this is unclear. What I think is fairly clear is that whoever and whatever was behind this, it's not going to have a strategic and long-term impact on the Ukrainian counteroffensive and on the situation on the battlefields. And now that we're entering, what, the fifth day of the reconnaissance in force, or the Ukrainian counteroffensive, which has begun so far, unfortunately for the Ukrainians, it is not going in their favor.
Peter, you want to respond?
Yeah, I just wanted to respond to the previous speaker and to say that he actually summed up some of the CNN reported stories by saying that, you know, it won't benefit either side. I mean, I have another summing up of this. Who is ultimately at fault? And the American side was very clear about it when White House spokesman, if I'm not mistaken, said that ultimately this rests at the feet of the Russians and the Russian political and military command. It was Vladimir Putin who decided to go to war against Ukraine under absolutely no grounds that would be internationally recognized. So ultimately, anything that is happening on Ukraine's territory is the responsibility of the invading force. So when we have to be very careful as we're discussing various different theories as to what happened, who the ultimate perpetrator of this atrocity is. Anything that is happening on the territory of Ukraine, be it this or any other calamity, anything that happens, any explosion that goes off in Ukraine or any explosion that goes off in a Russian city. See what's been happening in Belgorod, across Russia's territory. This is unprecedented and unheard of. This war has finally spilled over into Russia's territory. Who is at fault here? Vladimir Putin, who started this criminal war. That's all I have to say on that.
Peter, do you want to also respond to the effects, the possible effects on the military front? We know that the counteroffensive, let's say summer offensive, has been launched. And how is it going? And how will the incident affect the operation?
Well, that is actually the point. You know, it's not clear as to whether that has significantly dampened Ukraine's odds at a successful counteroffensive. If anything, this has shortened the front line alongside which both sides are fighting. The Russian side is defending. Ukrainians are attacking. It was far from foregone conclusion that Ukrainians would have tried to, you know, ford the very wide Dnieper River in that area of the Kakhovka Dam. This is far from clear that this was a viable and a feasible scenario. So that's another argument in favor of this not, having been, orchestrated and perpetrated by the Ukrainians. On the other hand, yes, Russians may actually have benefited from a somewhat shorter front line. They can now concentrate their troops elsewhere, including in the Zaporizhia area and fortifying the area around Bakhmut. We understand that the battles are now happening in several spots along the front lines. There have been some tactical successes by the Ukrainian forces. There have also been reported by Bloomberg and others, losses by Ukrainians of equipment and life. But once again, this could be just as a sort of reconnaissance operation going on, probing for weak spots by the Russians along the front lines, and we haven't even seen yet the thrust of this counteroffensive. So we all have to be very patient and see how it develops.
Leonardo Savin, how will this incident affect the Russian military operation here?
Of course, there is armed conflict, and there are both sides to use different strategies, different maneuvers, and in nature of the war of attrition, what we see now, there is, of course, need some kind of new surprise. And Russia under sanction, but we have no problem with arms, with weapons. Ukraine has, and Ukraine needs some Western supplies, and Ukraine need to organize different surprise for Russian sides. So, of course, there will be continuation of this protracted conflict. But at least we see that some positive signs from Ukrainian side. Already, Minister of Defense of Ukraine told that they are ready to start peace negotiation. It's very good, I think. But, of course, we don't know what to expect in the very near future. And I would like to remember that Ukraine started this war 9 years ago. They started to bomb armed citizens and armed cities. So Ukraine take responsibility for all what happened there. Russia just would like to finish this conflict that started in 2014.
Well, Anton, of course, both sides, they have their own argument here. But of course, if you go beyond this incident, it's really about, focuses about the counteroffensive or the Russian defense of the offensive from the Ukrainians. How is, reports say it has begun the offensive. If that's the case, what about the performance, so far? And how much they have achieved or what's the goal here?
Well, the Ukrainians have taken a 100 meters in here and 200 meters there. But again, Bloomberg just ran an article today sort of describing what people who follow this war carefully have known for several days, which is that whatever very minor gains the Ukrainian side has made over the past 5 days. It has come at an enormous amount of tanks, AFVs, armored fighting vehicles, and also lives. And of course, the Russians are losing also, but the Ukrainians have only come up against the forward positions. They haven't even gotten to the first line of the Russian defenses so far. Now, again, on this issue of whether this is reconnaissance by force or the beginning of the counteroffensive, I think these are sort of semantic differences. A successful reconnaissance in force, if it breaks through, will inevitably, if the Ukrainians play their cards right, become a counteroffensive. So far, the Ukrainians have achieved negligible results. But Peter is absolutely right that the bulk of the Ukrainian force has not been used yet. I think they are waiting to see where the breach will happen. The problem for the Ukrainians is that the clashes right now are happening in a part of the country, in the southern part of Ukraine, which is all grasslands and steppe lands. It is open terrain with tree lines separating agricultural fields. Everything can be easily seen. The Russians just destroyed a German-supplied Iris-T air defense weapon. The Russians have a predominance of artillery, and they prefer to fight this war at a distance, which is what they've been doing for at least half a year now. And the Russians have a total preponderance in terms of air power, which they've been using to deadly accuracy against the Ukrainians. So it is not out of the question that the Ukrainians will regain some territory if they're smart, and war, remember, is notoriously unpredictable and contingent. They can regain territory. But even if they do, their tanks, their troops will be sitting out in open fields or in villages surrounded by open fields with almost no cover and an anti-aircraft system in Ukraine that is what there is left of it. It's concentrated to get around Kiev and the major cities. So I'm afraid the odds are not in Ukraine's favor, which is not to say that it cannot play its cards intelligently.
Well, Peter, from the Ukrainian point of view, okay, counteroffensive with the support from European countries and also the U.S. Now, are they confident that they will achieve their goal and force the Russians to talk to them and to negotiate a peace deal?
Yes. First of all, once again, to comment briefly on what the previous speaker said, yes, you can be very much down on Ukraine's odds of having a significant, breakthrough in this counteroffensive. But then so were most Western analysts before Russia's invasion, predicting Kyiv to fall within 3 to 7 days. Where are they now, these, predictors? Once again, war is a very unpredictable thing. And so also you cannot discount the fighting spirit, the morale of the troops. And throughout this war, the morale of the Russian troops has been significantly lower than that of the Ukrainian forces, And so you cannot discount that. And once again, the military command, the political command in Russia seems to be in disarray with, the Wagner Group chief, Mr. Prigozhin, having openly entered a war against Minister of Defense Shoigu and the top general, Mr. Gerasimov. This is also quite unprecedented. It's the Economist came out with an article that no matter what the Putin's propaganda wants to show to you, not everything is in order. Putin's been, kept well away from commenting on anything having to do with the war simply because there's no good news coming from the battlefields. And he actually postponed his annual big press conference to sometime in the fall when there's more clarity on the battlefield. So this, I think, speaks volumes. Ukrainians have, I think, a good chance of, if not reclaiming all of their territory prior to, the invasion or 1991 borders, then at least having a significant breakthrough, and time will show when the Ukrainians will want to stop and at which point they will want to enter into negotiation with the enemy.
Leonardo Savin, is there a problem with the morale of the military, and also what's the end plan for Russian military here?
Of course, Russia will continue this operation because need to achieve their goals at the denazification and demilitarization of Ukraine. Because actually it's a really proxy war of the collective West, NATO countries against Russia. Ukraine just a battlefield. And of course, there is tragedy for Ukrainian people, what happened there. But Russia has no other choice. Russia will continue, and there is no any chance only to win for the Russia in this battle. And of course, it's very difficult to predict when it happens. It first of all depends of Western supplies to Ukraine and political, economical support of Ukraine. But we see that from day to day, big disappointment in the Western powers that conflict still continued. So maybe there will be some signals to Zelensky just to stop this conflict and go to negotiate with Russia. And of course, we all understand that Zelensky is a puppet of the West. They just directed by the West against the Russia. So of course, it's a problem.
Well, Anton, you know, let's take a look at the prospect or in the near future. People say probably there will be an escalation if before there's any talk or effort to solve the problem through dialogue. Former NATO Secretary General Anders Rumsen recently raised the prospect that the NATO members would deploy, quote, troops on the ground, end quote, in Ukraine. How likely is it? That's an escalation, right?
Well, that's going to be highly unlikely because Rasmussen also made abundantly clear in that same interview that what he does not mean is that NATO as an organization will be doing this. He said that certain members may make that decision. And if those troops come into conflict with the Russians and are killed and their armor destroyed, this will not be an attack against NATO. It will not trigger Article 5. It will simply be losses on the field. Whether this will happen is impossible to predict. I seriously doubt that it will. And second of all, where are those troops going to go exactly? Are they going to go to the battlefield and join the Ukrainians and actually attacking Russian positions? Or are they simply going to be in Western Ukraine guarding territory that they certainly don't want the Russians to get to, but that the Russians have no plans to getting to in the first place, and not much military capability to do so, at least in the next few months. So I think this is going to be decided on the field of battle. That's been the Ukrainian position, that's been the Western position, but the problem in that for Ukraine and the West is that this extends this war as conflict of attrition. And simply from the point of view of economic and military capabilities, Russia has more resources to burn.
Well, with that, we come to the end of today's show. Many thanks to our guests. Thank you for being with us. I'm Xu Qingzhuo. See you next time.